Journalist Faye Flam interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on February 9, 2020, about the coronavirus pandemic to be, now officially known as COVID-19. This is Segment 4, Scaring People. For the other segments, the complete hour-long interview, or other content on coronavirus risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
And you think, so in other words, the CDC press conferences haven't been, they haven't been giving people enough information about at least the experts' best guesses?
You know, I wouldn't go quite that far. They give you enough information that if you are listening knowledgeably to the entire news conference, to the entire presser, you learn what you need to know. But the emphasis isn't there. You know, I have yet to see a CDC, and I haven't watched them all, but I'm not aware of any of the CDC news conferences that felt like warnings to the American public that we're in for a hard ride. You know, they all felt, even though the information was there, I mean, you can find Nancy Messonnier saying, you know, it might go pandemic. You can find Fauci, you know, at NIH, you know, saying it's probably going to be a pandemic. You can't find anybody, you know, that's too strong. You can't find very many examples of high-ranking government officials saying in highly visible public venues, this looks likely to be disruptive to us, and we need to get ready.
And what are the main things?
Now, let me make an additional point.
Okay.
If you read the trade journals in any field, those messages are there. You read the trade journals in hospital administration, they're talking about getting ready for a very hard time. If you read the trade journals in transportation, they're talking about getting ready for a very hard time. If you read the trade journals in virtually any field, they are talking about the coronavirus as something that looks likely to be a major problem for our field. But if you read the mass media, you read the stuff that's for the general public, it's like China's in trouble and we've gone from 11 cases to 13 cases and, you know, that's no big deal.
Yeah. I think that is a very important point that, it seems like, right, our number of cases are so small right now that we know of, but that's that pyramid that we're talking about.
Well, it's that, and it's doubling time. You know the old story of the pasha that makes a deal with somebody that says, all right, I'm going to give you one grain of rice on the first square of the checkerboard, and two grains on the second square, and four grains on the third square, and so on. 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, et cetera. And, you know, the pasha makes the deal without realizing that he's going to have no rice left. Because by the time you get to 64 doublings and you finish the checkerboard, you have an incredible amount of rice.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe more than there actually exists.
And, Exactly. And people don't understand that. And nobody's explaining it to them that, you know, if you have five or six undiscovered, unisolated cases, and it's spreading at whatever rate it's spreading at, you know, 5 becomes 10 and 10 becomes 20 and 20 becomes 40. And maybe it takes 4 days for each of those. Don't use me the best estimate of that. But if it takes 4 days to double and there are now 10 cases we don't know about that are mild and are walking around, then in 4 days there will be 20, and in 8 days there will be 40, and in 60 days there will be 80, and pretty soon there will be thousands, and then there will be hundreds of thousands, and then we'll know about it because the tip of the pyramid will be visible.
Yes, Yeah, yeah. I mean, people have talked about exponential spread, but I don't think that what that means has been emphasized enough. That's what's likely to happen. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You okay?
I think one of the mantras of the World Health Organization is facts, not fear.
Okay.
And it's like those are not opposites. Oh. Facts, not fear, is a very weird way to set things up. I mean, imagine saying that about vaccination. Imagine saying that about crossing the street to your 2-year-old. Fear, I mean, it's certainly true that excesses of fear are harmful. Excesses of fear, make you do unwise things. They make you reallocate resources in undesirable ways. At very high levels, fear can be paralyzing. There's no question that extremely high fear is harmful. There's also no question that other than extremely high fear, fear is a tool. Fear is a motive to get ready. Fear is mobilizing. It's only extremely high fear that's immobilizing. What sense can you make of the mantra facts not fear when the facts are fearful? Yes, we want to give people the facts, but we want to give people the facts in a vivid enough way that they understand what the experts already understand, that this looks bad. I have lived through and worked on a number of pandemics and possible pandemics, and it's worth looking at some comparisons. Okay, are you with me?
Uh-huh. Okay.
H5N1 bird flu looked enormously more deadly than this does.
Yes.
A very high percentage of people who caught it died. But it was not very good at communicating human to human. It was much more a zoonotic disease than it was a pandemic disease. People got it from animals, and they had a hard time giving it to each other. It wasn't easy to get it from animals. I mean, it was mostly a disease from animal to animal, sometimes from animal to human, and occasionally from human to human. And there was fear for a while that it looked like it was getting more skillful at transmitting human to human. And if that happened, that looked like it could be, the worst catastrophe in recorded history. It looked for a couple of years like, it could be worse than the 1918 flu pandemic. Mm-hmm. This is not that. The bad news is we know this transmits easily in a way that H5N1 didn't. And the good news is we don't know the fatality rate, but we know it's way, 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 way lower than it was for H5N1. I was part of the effort to get people to get ready for H5N1. Which never came. Now I'm trying to help people get ready for the coronavirus, and I think it's going to come, but it isn't going to be H5N1. It's going to be significantly less disastrous than that.
You mean that, right? Okay?
Then that would have been, exactly. Yeah. On the other extreme was swine flu in 2009. And when swine flu was first discovered, and it's perhaps worth reminding your readers that it didn't originate in China. It originated in Mexico and the United States.
Right.
And opinions differ about who came first, whether we got it from Mexico or they got it from us. But in the early days of swine flu, it looked pretty severe. Not like H5N1 certainly, but it looked like it was more severe than we liked to think. But it very quickly became clear that it was genuinely pandemic, it was genuinely easily transmitted, it was going to go worldwide, but it was quite mild. And WHO, and once again, I was part of trying to warn people about swine flu in the very early days, and then we very quickly discovered that it was pretty mild, and it was hard to say. And WHO got into a lot of trouble because they were reluctant, having sounded the alarm, they were reluctant to say, well, pandemic, yes, but such a mild pandemic that H5N1, I'm sorry, not H5N1, that the swine flu saved lives. Did you know that?
No. How?
The swine flu, the strain of the pandemic strain replaced a more dangerous strain.
Oh.
You want a best case scenario? That's a pandemic that saved lives.
Wow. That is really something. Yeah. So those are kind of our past cases that we can learn from. And what are...
More than that, those are bookends.
Okay.
You know, what H5N1 might have been is worse than anybody thinks this is going to be. What swine flu turned out to be is better than anybody thinks this is going to be.
And
so it's going to be somewhere in the middle between those bookends.